chapter 3, or rather the story of the Chet Etz Hadas and the curse, or maybe you want to call it the punishment, but the Pesach doesn't call it punishment, it calls it the curse that the man and woman and snake incurred because of what they did. So the only background that we need, really, like I said, the beginning of the previous chapter was setting background, some of it which is for this story. But what is important, what we really need to know, is only the last thing in the first part of that story, which is the command. We can eat from Kol Etz Hagan, but not from the Etz Hadas Tevera, because you will die. Everything else is context only in the sense that, you know, man was created, woman was created, and these two people are characters in the story. The whole thing about the rivers and everything seems to not be connected with that, seems to have its own purpose. Same as the whole thing with the naming of the animals and the way the woman was created, all of that is not really connected, apparently. You will notice, and this seems to be important for understanding the language of the dialogue between the snake and the woman. Another thing which we don't really have is the story of creation of the snake. Of course, it's part of all the animals that man named, I guess. But one thing is important is that there seem to be three parts. There's like, number one, you can eat from all trees, including trees of the garden. A second thing is, Etz Hadas Tevera loisoichal, you cannot eat from the Etz Hadas Tevera. And the third thing is, if you will eat from that, you will die. And of course, that doesn't have an explicit reference, but seems to be connected with the third thing, which is that there is an Etz HaChaim. As we had before that, we had that God planted Kol Etz Nechmad, Ve'etz HaChaim, Ve'etz Hadas. So the Etz Hadas we have, the Etz HaChaim we don't have, but we have something implied, which is that you will die, which seems to be the opposite of Chaim. And we have the permission to eat from all the other trees. Okay, what we have now is the first framing of the story, and this is important, is to do with the fact that the primordial situation, as if the situation before we imagine the kind of humans with the kind of culture that we have now, was naked. The man and his wife both were naked, and they did not have any shame in that. And it seems like the wife is important here, because in our culture, it's more shame for a woman to be naked than for a man. But in that before situation, both of them were naked. There was nothing, they didn't realize that there's a problem with that, right? That's what not having shame is. Now, there was a snake, and he was also Arum. Now, this Arum is definitely a play on words. It says he was naked, but of course, animals are naked always. They don't really have clothing even now, so that's not the point. What it means is shrewd, but apparently, it's the same word, so that we somehow associate shrewdness with nakedness or a certain kind of shrewdness. Now, this is also important to realize, I think, for the pshat of the story. In our culture, like in the Medrash culture, in our language, which is based on this story a lot, and maybe also based on the conclusion of this story, snakes are considered a symbol of evil in some way. Like we have in Kabbalah or in Medrash, like we talk, say someone's a snake, we mean something like he's very evil. But it seems like, at least in the beginning of the story, it's just the opposite. The snake is a symbol of wisdom, or maybe of some kind of knowledge or some kind of shrewdness. Not all shrewdness are considered good, but a snake is considered a smart animal. And there is also different cultures where you can see that this is true. There might be also in the Tanakh itself some places like this. Now, this snake has a discussion with the woman, Haisha. Now, of course, the fact that he has discussion is already some kind of shrewdness. It means that there's something, maybe he might want something. This is one of the things not explained in the story. What is going on with the snake? What is the point of him asking the woman to eat from the Etz Hadas Tevera? But the only thing we get is the end of the story is an explanation of the relationship which man has with snakes. And specifically, like, because this is something important for the stories in terms of Maaseh Bereishis to explain, just like we have an explanation of how man is sovereign over animals. That's something that's said in the sixth day of creation, that man was given sovereignty over animals. And then there's some animals which are, and that maybe this is also what the shrewdness of the snake consists of nowadays, is that he's in some sense not under human sovereignty, and in another sense he is. So like, and this is the end of the story, which gives us the conclusion. And these stories can be read as like some kind of poetic, or we could say mythical, way of explaining how or why these kind of weird relationships, which don't seem to be explicable by like simple logic or something, exist. Like a snake, in the one hand, somehow escapes human control. He has this like slithering thing where he slithers around and you can't really control him. And people have domesticated some level of domestic snakes, but it's considered always, like we talk sometimes, like stories of like great kings or great wise people, that he had a domesticated snake. But it's not really how life works. Snakes resist domestication, resist human control even. We could kill them, and in a certain sense, even easier than other animals, since they walk on the ground, they slither on the ground, and they're very close to the ground, so it seems to be easy, at least for a smaller snake, for a man to crush them, or even for bigger snakes. It's not really hard if you can get on top of him. Before he gets on top of you, you can crush him. But on the other hand, he somehow escapes control, and that is, we could see that as being because of a like shrewdness or a smartness or wisdom that a snake has, which is like he figured out how to live within the human world without being entirely under his control. And this, we see this already in the beginning of the story. So the snake has this conversation with the woman, and he starts saying, "Af kiyomer lehim lesechlim kaletzagan." This "af" seems to mean like something like "so," or "is it true that God said you cannot eat from the trees?" And this is a falsehood. This is something like he wants to get a certain reaction. It's not true. It says explicitly, and that's what the woman answers him. "No, we can." But you know how this is called framing. You know how what you start off someone with is the impression that they have. So first, like he gives an impression like God has some desires here. Like God has some ulterior motives. There's something like God doesn't want you. He's like the word "not." He puts the word "not" into her head. God is not about not eating. "Oh yeah, but it's true that it does say we should eat, and that's her answer. But this pri etza, this pri ha'etza shebeseichagan, it doesn't say etza das tevera. It says ha'etza shebeseichagan, which is interesting because earlier you see that it said that God planted called etz nechmad ve etza das tevera ve etza chaim beseichagan. The etza chaim was said beseichagan. Now it said the pri ha'etza shebeseichagan. I wonder about this. I don't have a clear explanation about this. Anyways. That God said, "Don't eat it and don't even touch it because you will die." And this is another thing where it doesn't really say "don't touch" before, but not sure how to interpret that right now. But this is in the snake wanted to get to this answer. This is the important thing. Maybe she also exaggerated, and possibly this is because of what the snake did. Like the snake put her this lie into her head, and she sort of exaggerated what God wants you not to do. And the snake says, "Yeah, this is not correct. What God threatened that you will die is not correct. What really going to happen is..." So the snake says, "God is threatening you with death, but that's just because he doesn't want you to eat from this fruit of knowledge of good and evil, because then you will be like God, your eyes will be opened, and you will be like gods." Kalihim probably should be translated as the gods, who know good and evil. And gods can mean in the biblical context something like angels and things like that. So this is important because this is the way of the snake convincing her, and this seems... it's not even clear in the story if this was wrong. I mean, there's many ways in which people read the story, but the most simple way in which I read it is that this is true. In the sense of knowledge of good and evil, even knowledge of good and evil, doesn't belong to humans. Knowledge is something that belongs to gods. And there are some, in some sense, commandments or mitzvahs or like things, limitations of humans, we could call it that way, which are because of them being denied the knowledge and the wisdom of the gods. And that might be for good reasons. Sometimes, you know, there's all these kind of mythical stories about how it's not good for humans to know everything. But another interpretation of it is to say that it's just jealousy. Gods are jealous. They want to keep their special thing for themselves. They don't want it to have for you. It's also true that this, like... this threat, you will die the day that you eat, is in some sense true, but it's not literally true. As we see later, they didn't actually die that day. So they were not punished by death. Some people interpret it to mean that they became mortal, but I think that that's also less of the simple pshat. It doesn't ever say that they lived forever before that. It says that there was Etz HaChaim that might have let them live forever, but that was not the simple state. There does seem to be a dialectic between how human beings can have one of the two. You could seem to live forever, at least, or maybe even live forever, or you could know. And this knowledge... and this is, again, a way in which humans are limited relative to gods. Humans are things that know in some sense, but cannot know entirely, or they pay the price for knowing, which is death. And the snake, the like kind of shrewdness that's attributed to the snake here, is precisely in this kind of like calculating interests. And this is what we call shrewdness or armumiyut to this day. Like a normal person would say, okay, if God doesn't want us to eat from this etzadas tevera, it must not be good for him. And then a shrewd person would say, maybe God gets something out of it. And it's always hard to differentiate in reality who is correct. A lot of this is a question of how to look at things. In any case, well, turns out that he was right. So the woman sees, the tree is good to eat, it tastes pleasant, it looks good, and she eats it, and she gives her husband also to eat. And what happens is precisely what the snake said will happen. Their eyes are opened, and now the verse explains us what does this opening of their eyes consist of, and consists of them realizing that they are naked. So therefore they sow some leaves of a fig, and they make themselves some belts to cover their nakedness. And obviously, we understand this is to cover their private areas, which is the traditionally, culturally seen as the most shameful thing to have naked. So we see very clearly that this is actually the knowledge that was offered. It's not knowing everything. It's knowing yourself or knowing your own body. And like I said yesterday, we can see in children this, like children who are don't have this knowledge, don't understand what their body's wants are, don't have a shame of their nakedness. Once you realize what the organs are for and things like that, then you have a shame in your nakedness. And this is precisely what the snake gave them, or what the eating from this fruit gave. So now we have the second dialogue in this story, and this is the dialogue between God and the man and the woman. And then later the snake. So this is again, by the way, another important thing in the story, which is that there is a dialogue. This is the first dialogue, is the dialogue between the snake and the woman. If you want, you could see even before yesterday, we said that there's like a dialogue, an implied dialogue, where God sees its loytov and what is good and what is needed. But here we have an explicit dialogue between the snake and the woman. The first dialogue in the story is a dialogue between the snake and the woman. And then the second dialogue is the one between God and man. Unlike in the first story of creation, where there's no dialogue, right? Nothing speaks back. So they hear God walking in the garden. That's like you're supposed to imagine that something like the leaves rustling and you hear something talking, and they hide. Now they hide again because they're naked, as he's going to say. And this is itself. Before that, they were not supposed to hide. And God calls out to the man and says, "Where are you?" So like he's looking for him. And he answers, he says, "I've heard your voice, but I was afraid because I'm naked and I hid." So it's not clear if this is meant to be something like a explanation of why he's hiding, or maybe it's a he thinks that it makes sense. Like, yes, I'm covering myself because I'm hidden. And then God, but of course we know that God didn't want man to realize that he's naked, because that's explicitly what he told him, not to eat the tree, which causes you to realize that you're naked. So right away he answers, "Who told you that you are naked? Is it because you ate the tree that I told you not to eat from?" So obviously that's the story. He was not supposed to hide because he was not supposed to realize that it's shameful to be naked. And the man says, "Yes, the woman who you gave me the tree." And God speaks to the woman and says, "What did you do?" And the woman says, "The snake has convinced me. Hishiani has sort of seduced me, and I've eaten." And therefore, God goes to the snake, and then to the woman, and then to the man. So in the precise reverse order, like there's this like nice chain where he like went to the man and said, "Who gave it to you?" "My wife." "God is the wife who gave it to you, the snake." And then the curses here go in the reverse order, like first to the snake, then to the woman, and then to the man. And then this is like the result of the story. So God told, and this is very important, because again, in the first story we had only blessings, Vayvorech, 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 and now we have Urir. So this is really where, and like I said, this belongs to human culture, to the cultural institutions, where there are some cursedness, there's some ra, or some sense of cursedness. So the first thing is God curses the snake, says, "Because you did this, you will be cursed from all animals." So this is like you before, you were Arum Mikol Habahima Mikol Chayat Asadeh. You were the shrewdest from all the animals. Now you will be cursed from all the animals. Doesn't mean that you're not going to be shrewd anymore, but in some sense, you're going to be cursed. You will walk on your stomach, slither is what I said, and eat sand. And that's, I'm not sure that eating sand, the sand is important, the afad, dirt maybe, is important in the story, because that's where the man was created from, afar min adaman, maybe also all the animals, it's not clear. They're just missing the kind of neshama or the kind of das. But as you notice here, das was actually something that the person received only from eating the tree. And don't think it means literally you will eat dirt. It just means you'll be so close to the dirt, like that's what you're eating. Of course, snakes don't actually literally eat dirt. I don't think that's what anyone ever thought. And there will be an hate between you and the woman, and so you for your children and her children. This is important. This uvein zarecha is an important verse because this shows us this whole story is really not about just something that happened once, but is like an archetype, or like maybe the logic is that what happened to the first snake will also happen to all of them. But if a snake is something that can speak and have this whole conversation, then there must be individual snakes. But since the story says that this is between you and your descendants and between the woman and her descendants, so obviously it's not really a story about a snake. It's a story about something called snake, and maybe just an image for something. So this is like one of the big, I think, reasons for thinking that this story is not meant to be like a literal account of the first days of creation or something. Okay. And the important, interesting dialectic was which what I described earlier. The man can something like squish you on your head, and you could maybe teshufeni. It's the same word for both, so I don't know exactly how to translate it now. But the same in the same way, you can somehow sting him or bite him on his knee, on his heel. So something like this is the interesting thing. Like since the snake is so low, so on the one hand, a man can just squish you with his foot, but on the other hand, you could also, teshufene akev. Well, that's how I always understood it. Maybe it actually means just that you will have to something get him at his ekev. We know this language, shififon, which means like a snake or something like, maybe it means something like slither or, I don't know. Okay. Then the woman gets her curses, and this is an explanation for something very important about a woman. It says, I will give you much pain or much hurt. It says etzev, which means something like hurt, in your pregnancy and your birth. You will give birth children with be'etzev. Ve'eli shech tishukatzech v'huyim shalbach. And you will be under the power of your husband. I think, again, these two parts of the pasuk mean the same thing. Teshuka is usually, we think that shuka means something like passion or lust. But I think that actually, it means something like you look up to him, or something like you are under his control, or something like being submissive. So the both half mean the same thing. And this is an explanation for why men have lordship over women, at least in their archetypal way of having relationships. Men are the leading ones and women are the follower ones. And that is given explanation here because of a curse given to the woman for apparently causing her husband to have to eat the etzadas and realize that he's naked. Okay, and then the Adam gets the curse for listening to his wife. Okay, and eating this tree, he gets the curse of the earth. So not the man itself gets cursed, but his work gets cursed. So this is, again, very much what the woman does is give birth. What a man does is go to work in the earth. And that also would be be'itzavon. So we have the same word, be'itzavon, with hurt or pain. You will eat the fruits of the earth, there will be weeds growing, and you will end up eating grass because of the weeds growing. I understand this. And you will have to sweat in order to eat bread. That's one thing. Until you return to the earth, for you will take in which you were taken from, because you are dirt and you will return to dirt. This is how the God's speech, so to speak, ends, like a very sharp ending. You are dirt and you will return to dirt. And this is where we get the interpretation that this is when a man was destined to die because he's dirt. But apparently, give the logic, the reasoning that he says is something that was said before. Afarata vel afarata shuv. You were already afar when you were created from afar. So it might not mean that. It might just mean some kind of thing like you will work your whole life until you die. And this is the sad state of human beings. They work for their food and then they die. Okay, now we have, so that's the end of the story. Then we have two more things which seem to not really connect. One is that the wife gets a name, Chava, for she is the mother, Em Kol Chai, Chava, so the mother of Chayut or Chaim or living things. And that's, of course, different than what we had before, which is that he called her Isha. And apparently the difference is that this is a proper name for her, for individual name of this woman, versus Isha, which is a name for the woman. Not all women are called Chava, but Chava is a name for the first woman who is the mother of all. Another thing is that God made the man and his wife clothing. So this seems important because before, she only had Aleteina, the fig leaves, which he covered his apparently his private parts with, but he was still naked. As he says, as we see, he was still hiding from God. So, and then God makes him leather clothing, and this maybe is also like an archetype. People wear leather or the hides of animals in order to keep themselves covered or keep themselves warm. And then we have one more thing, which is the last note of this whole story, which is that God says, now man is like one of us. So again, this is why I said God should be translated as gods, because God is sort of speaking to gods or like angels, which are called gods, and saying he's like one of us since he has Da'at Tovera. And this is very clearly, as the Nachash said, Da'at Tovera is something Kelohim, and now man is Kelohim because he has Da'at Tovera. But now maybe he will also eat from the Etz HaChaim and he will live forever. And this, I think, the most simple understanding that I've realized recently about this story is that man versus gods has these two things. In one way, man is like God because he has knowledge. Gods have knowledge. Another way, gods are different than men. Gods are the deathless ones. Gods live forever, but man doesn't live forever. It says, Chaya nochi la'olam is something God says when he swears that in himself. I'm the one that lives forever. So it seemed to be like the original, or like in some sense, these things trade off against each other. You could either live forever or you could have knowledge. Man can't be like God in both ways. You can't both live forever and have knowledge. So now that he has chosen the tree of Da'at Tovera, he can't also have the tree of life, which is some kind of idea which you will eat and live forever. Maybe God supposedly like eats from that tree and lives forever. And therefore, he is thrown out of the garden to go work on the dirt, on the land, on the earth that he was taken from, and that was outside the garden. And then there is a gate and guards put and the way from east to the garden, which is interesting because the garden wasn't east, and this is even more east from it, so why would the door be there? I'm not sure. These two things, kruvim vidlat acher v'metapechet. Kruvim seems to be something like, again, kruvim is something we have also in the stories of Yecheskel and others, are like angels which guard the gates, and some kind of sword that turns each other over. I don't know what that exactly means. And this guards the way to the Etz HaChaim. But again, this I think is also all a very simple way of describing why man traded his knowledge for his everlasting life. So in other words, maybe he could have eaten from the tree of life and then he would not have knowledge, because then that would be the difference between him and God. And that's like as if what God would have wanted. But the snake's plan was to do the opposite, to have him have knowledge but not life, or not eternal life. Okay, so that's for this chapter. Of course, nobody really understands it. I just tried to describe it.